Hello and welcome to the Maverick Radio Hour. I'm your host, GT Maverick, and it is November 17th, 2021. I'm coming to you from Kansas City, Missouri. And it is quite a beautiful day out there. It is most excellent. Sun shining, there's blue skies, the trees are looking pretty in their fall colors. Some of them are falling down and catching the wind flowing through in front of our view. It's that time of year. We do have Thanksgiving coming up. And by the way, I would like to encourage everyone out there to forget about those surface divisions that divide us and to remember to come together and be happy that we have the good people in our lives that we do have, family, friends, and community. It's beautiful stuff. In other news, it looks like, in some ways, we'll just go straight into the show here, as it would appear that there are a lot of battles being won, so to speak. In fact, there was, you might say, another one, a very large one, that we won right recently. Now, this doesn't mean we need to drop back onto our haunches and relax, all that sort of thing, but it means that we got some momentum. It's important to keep going with it, you might say. This is especially what it's pertaining to is the battle against tyranny that is going on. The law courts, the legal system is catching up on this front. And this is something that I've been talking about since that people have been talking about this for ever since this started back in 2020 in March, that all these impositions, none of them, not a single one of them, was constitutional or legal at all in any way. And apparently, for the longest time in those courts, there was that was brought up quite quickly, certainly by tons of people whose small businesses were completely wrecked and ruined by this manufactured crisis, but the fact that it's a manufactured crisis that plays upon people's fears and groupthink that was imposed on their minds by lying corporate media, absolutely brazen liars, and of course by the very people who brought out the panic itself were the ones who were claiming this is how we need to handle this quote emergency, you know, and this is how it's been going for some while when it comes to this top level authoritarian approach to abusing the population and imposing tremendous harm on people to control them, of course. But when this came out back in March, and there was clearly people who, everybody panicked. What does this mean? Who knows what this is? I was part of them too. I didn't know what was going on with this. It might be that, hey, actually there is something going on we need to be concerned about. And you say better than safe than sorry, and clearly we were extra safe through the whole thing. Extra safe behind self-imposed walls and prison bars. But at the same time, the tremendous destruction that was wrought upon us by the lockdown orders, by the panic, by the mandates, the mask wearing, eventually when it got to the vaccines, but the amount of panic that the corporate media wrought upon people is in itself absolutely inexcusable. And that itself, in the vein of yelling fire in a crowded movie theater, is really, that's how they're implicated in this. And that's one of the things that's happening right now, too. It, amongst all the awakenings that are going on, more people getting it, more people understanding what's been behind the scenes all this time, is that the main corporate media is just lying, and they have been doing it for a very long time. And it's something that has always gotten to me. It was clear that there was a ton of this going on back when I was just a teenager when I started to really see through this thing, and then it just evidently more and more and more so. But their culpability in this, the corporate media's culpability in this, and it can be tracked and it can be determined and put into a court of law, because they need to go down. They need to go down for this. The people who are perpetuating this panic based on lies at the bare minimum. And again, bare minimum when it comes to bringing these criminals to court on a further level, bare minimum when it comes to the individuals who, let's say they were, you know, superintendents of schools, or they were parts of pediatric organizations, or they were involved in like DASIX, Eco Health Alliance, or whatnot. The thing is, let's not get up to that. Okay, there's different tiers here. Not get up to the Eco Health Alliance sort of thing, because those are the clear perpetrators who need to go to jail for this. Of course, Fauci too. But we're talking lower level folks who, through their criminal negligence, it is the criminal negligence, those who are in those positions of authority, who should have known better, who should have actually investigated what was really going on, and actually, in a lot of cases, didn't even need to investigate much. All you had to do was just open your eyes and your ears and use your own senses and actually, I don't know, care about the well-being of the people around you and use basic understandings of biology, psychology, and physics in order to see that this whole thing was a lie. One of the most egregious and evident ways in which I personally witnessed that this thing was a lie back in March of 2020 and in spring of 2020, April as well. I'm not exactly sure when it was I actually got out there to see this happening. It was within 2 weeks of it being imposed, end of March, early April, where I saw in Washington, D.C. that they closed all the public bathrooms. And I've mentioned this before in one of my former shows, but it's absolutely clear that the people who were doing things like that, who did that, who imposed that sort of rule and sent out their health department to do that, they did not care about public health at all. They're not interested in it. They weren't, I mean, the portion of public health that they were interested in was that of impairing public health, to create a pandemic, to create disease, to cause all sorts of problems. When you mess with sanitation like that, when you mess with, you know, in D.C. especially, huge, huge homeless population in that city, and you shut down all those public bathrooms, where are they going to go? What's going to happen to them? I mean, sanitation is, and this is what I talked about some weeks back. Sanitation really is the thing that got us past this, the low life expectancy that was common in the old world. Sanitation, running clean water, that's absolutely huge. You don't have things like typhoid fever and cholera and that amongst the vast majority of the really deadly diseases that come upon people is as a result of unclean conditions that people are living in. And so by closing public bathrooms in Washington, D.C., the health officials knew that. They knew directly that would immediately cause all sorts of harm to the homeless population in that city. Now, So that's, I mean, there's a direct derivation there. You can deduce directly that that decision leads to harm to public health. It just does. There's no other way to look at that. It's and anyone in a position of authority in a health department in that city and in any other city in which they did this, because this is the sort of thing that, I mean, I listen to a lot of talk radio, and this is one of the things that goes kind of under the radar. It doesn't quite get caught by a lot of the folks who have now analyzed this and examined it and who are clear and aware of what the whole program is. This is one of the things that's kind of gone under the radar, didn't get caught in the various nets of people trying to, you know, see the absurdity and illogic that has been imposed upon the population over these last couple of years. But that's one of the things that being done itself, there's no wiggle room there for the people who impose that to say that it's some sort of benefit for the population. You know, similar as the those who sent COVID patients to nursing homes. There's no wiggle room there at all for them supposedly doing something for the benefit of people. There isn't. There's a direct line that this is a harmful thing that was done. And so at the bare minimum, when it comes to those people in authority who impose that sort of thing, they are guilty of criminal negligence at minimum. Now, that can be brought up in a court of law, and that can be explained very clearly to anyone, and you're going to win a case on this. You're going to win your cases on this, so long as the people in there, people who are part of this, judge, jury, attorneys, all that sort of thing, they're clear-eyed and aware of what's going on in this world and, you know, what happens when people are, in order to keep them healthy, what's necessary for that at a basic level. It's not even necessary to get to the level of pharmaceuticals and whether or not they're effective and that sort of thing on that front. This is real low-hanging fruit for those who are trying to find, going after those who perpetrated this abuse upon the population here in this country, and quite possibly elsewhere too. I mean, the exact details of how each country in the free world, Western world, had their own sort of impositions upon their own population. Every one of them is different. But this is, when it comes to shutting down and closing public bathrooms, imposing that on businesses and imposing that on when I say public bathrooms, in some places you have areas that that are actually publicly funded and can be accessed, but also imposing it upon the businesses that are generally accessible to the public is astounding. And clearly wrong, and that's an area that is unequivocal and can be deduced that those in charge who imposed such a thing were actively looking to harm the health of the population. Again, no wiggle room on that front. But from what I've heard, when it came to the imposition of this back in March and April, and the first the legal battles that were brought against the government, you know, either the federal government or the states or health departments of counties or cities, municipalities, that sort of thing. And suits are being brought against them for lost wages, lost revenue, for the closing of their businesses, all that sort of thing. From what I hear, it would appear that for some while there, and I don't think this isn't going further, this isn't still, you know, operative, it would appear, which is part of the reason the legal system is catching up, but Now, here at the time, the judges would throw out and dismiss these suits because of the stated rationale that it was a national emergency. And, I mean, that it's... You have to, apparently after that, it's necessary to say that, okay, well, no, this isn't an emergency. It's not. Because if they can just dismiss something because it's a national emergency, ooh, it's an emergency. Well, anything could be an emergency if it's trumped up and has a, you know, corporate money behind it and all sorts of people on the radio and on television who are paid to say whatever, who will literally read anything that they are told to if they're paid enough money to do it, which I think Terry Bradshaw actually got a big payout for saying what he did about Aaron Rodgers, I'll bet you. And hey, Terry, yeah, enjoy that cash. I'm sure you really need it, buddy. Anyway, I saw a quick tangent here. I saw a video a while back that had, it was a compilation of all these idiots on television talking trash on Rodgers. And I thought a good combination, good follow-up to that compilation would be the compilation of the, 100 or so reports in the last couple months of athletes collapsing and or dying on the field during their matches, whether in soccer, football, tennis, whatever. Like, have those, just put those right next to each other, and then you'll really see just how culpable the corporate media is for the garbage that they have been shoveling out onto the population for decades now, but which has reached a fever pitch these days. But anyway, these corporate entities will say anything for money. And right now, money is being printed like there is no tomorrow. Apparently, they passed the infrastructure bill, quote, infrastructure. And that just adds on $1.2 trillion, at least ostensibly, to what is already just a madhouse, print as much money as you want, modern monetary theory, quote-unquote, you know, free-for-all here, spending spree. That, as I've mentioned before, so much of that coronavirus relief funds and multiple bills like that were passed in 2020 there. There was up to, I think, $3.5 trillion at one point. And this is on top of the what they call the qualitative easing that the Fed was doing for the last decade, since 2009. That's just, I mean, the amount of money that they're just shoveling off into the system. And it's not necessarily into the system either. The amount of money that just gets printed out and then sent out to wherever, it just gets printed out and sent out to wherever it needs to go, essentially. And it doesn't necessarily even get printed out, of course. These are zeros and ones that they're throwing in on computers. And they just end up going to whoever it is that apparently needs that sort of thing. Okay, well, who needs the money now? Is there someone who's going to default? This goes back to the too big to fail idea of the 2009, when you had these large banks, these huge companies, AIG and some others too. It's an insurance company in that case, and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, who was determined by that very crisis itself, which again was mostly manufactured in order to, you know, have a ginormous ripoff that no one actually went to jail for again. After that, you had that too big to fail. You had that too big to fail concept. These banks and these organizations, whether they had any real public utility or not, for one reason or the other, because of their connections and there being such an underpinning to the economic system itself, banking system, finances, and ostensibly, which is ostensibly leads to the actual economy that we as people interact with. Because really, we'll get to that point later, but jump off of that, but that too big to fail thing, those organizations which were thereby identified as too big to fail, those are the ones that just basically, you know, they get the money these days. So they were identified as so, and they, because they got that, those bailouts, and in a way they kind of gotten taken over, not necessarily in any in a direct sense that like, oh, okay, now there's someone from the Fed who is part of the board at, you know, Morgan Stanley or something, or at AIG or at or et cetera, that being that they backstopped them in that position means that they're going to have influence in what the company does, to the point where you could say that they're whoever gave them that money is in the position of authority in that organization. Now, this applies to really any organization that receives that sort of money. And if what you're doing, like the Fed and the Treasury are, is just printing out money, like through the coronavirus spending bills, through the quantitative easing, and to a certain extent, perhaps off this infrastructure bill, I don't know. If you're just printing out that money and then sending it to whatever too big to fail institution supposedly needs it in order to not collapse, because they've gotten they're holding the bag after all some economic downturns, that sort of thing, then really what you're doing is just that whoever's printing out that money just becomes in charge of them. And then whoever's printing out that money becomes in charge of all those things. Then they can just print out money and print out money and print out money and print out money. There's no end to this until there's an end to it, and it's not pretty. And if we don't have something in place in order to pick up after the collapse of a currency or the hyperinflation of a currency that comes along as a result of doing such a thing, then we're going to have a real bad time. Now, this is something that that I noticed clearly some while back, that a lot of others have as well. What do we do about these economic crises that seem to come along with regularity? And a lot of that regularity is dependent upon how many, the economic conditions of the time, the circumstances. But a new economic, that is the economic revolution that I've been passing out, and that is available on my website, again, toughdesvariations.com. There's a pamphlet and a larger chart that shows some of the important ways in which this is beneficial for everybody involved, whether you are whether you're rich or poor, whether you own a lot or you own very little, everybody wins from this. It creates an economy. It doesn't show how to run it. The imposition itself takes elements from communism, but the operation of the economy itself is entirely free market capitalism. So it takes the better parts of these different economic theories and puts them into one. In itself, it can be through one, the imposition, which is beneficial for everybody, and then it's a hands-off approach, and the economy goes as long as it goes until we run into a situation like we're running into now, or where some other country or organizational level of people, whether it's a state or a city-state or even to the level of a county, depending on the circumstances of the people, where they are at that time, it can be brought in for them. If it's useful for them, if it would be good to do so, if your currency is deteriorating to such a level where it's not helpful to continue using it, or if your entire population is in debt to a lot of organizations that have no principles and that are abusing your population, you can give them the middle finger with this and say that, hey, we're going to start our own currency. You can take this money that we owe you, and you can print it out for yourself and pay yourself off, but we don't need to use it. So this is what this can do, and I would encourage you all to check that out. Again, it's a pamphlet, flyer that you can pass out, and a chart a little bit bigger that gives some of the pertinent benefits behind it. And also, there's a video on YouTube. You'll see my channel on there, Garrett Tufte, to check out the video that I give, about 20-minute, 25-minute, talking about it. So on the, as things continue to kind of progress as they are today, and where they're going to be tomorrow, that sort of thing, this idea is what can get us out and recreate a new economy, declare an economic declaration of independence of sorts, and say that, hey, we're gonna take back our money for ourselves. Because it's been going on for so long that the institutions that, and this goes to the institutions that are that operate under the auspices of government, whether they are directly the federal government themselves or the state governments or local governments, or they are companies that are headquartered here in the United States, there is a necessity for them to respect principles, particularly that of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. If they are not, if our government is not respecting the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, then it has lost legitimacy. This is a very important point for those out there to understand this, is that if an organization under the auspices of the United States is not respecting the Constitution and not respecting the principles of individual liberty and personal sovereignty, then that government, that organization, that institution is no longer legitimate. And we have there is no need to provide that institution and that organization with any of our efforts, respect, even a lot of our contracts are no longer, they're void based on that government breaking its most sacred duty to uphold the principles of the Constitution itself. So that is what that in this era, certainly for the last in the United States, most certainly, and in all other countries where they have a constitution that was ratified by a Republican government, by its people, that had analogs to the Bill of Rights, in which individual rights were respected and they're not to be abused, and regardless of whether, some so-called emergency comes along, because these governments, this is the sort of thing, they're a beast. And we as people, we put this beast out there because only for the reason that it's useful in some ways. Only for the reason that it's useful. Now, if it's not useful, then we get rid of it, like Thomas Jefferson said. But we put it up there, and it needs to be framed. Otherwise, there are certain indelible portions in the structure of authoritative social life that works within our deep parts of our psychology and instincts that lead to the corruption. Absolute power corrupts absolutely, as they say. That requires that this beast that we create, this hierarchical collection of authority that is useful in us working together on large-scale projects, for instance, or contributing to our common defense and a civil society. The utility behind that is dependent to some level on its respect for individual sovereignty and autonomy. Now, this is codified in the Constitution, codified there very specifically for this purpose, because otherwise these things, these governments, these authoritative structures and hierarchies that we create as people, you know, we make churches, we make corporations, we make large businesses, we make governments. These are collections of these are all collections of individuals, us coming together over common purposes to effect some end that is presumably beneficial to us as individuals, friends, families, and communities. Now, when they're not useful on that front anymore, and they become disrespectful of us as people, again, it goes back to Jefferson's quote, we have a right to abolish it. That abolition, that can be done in many different ways. We can ignore what this authoritative structure claims to impose upon us, for instance. And this is right now one of the number one tool that everyone can use in order to get out of the mandates from the virus panic and other authoritarian impositions that we are being told to follow is noncompliance. It's just to say no. No, I'm not doing that. No, I'm not going to wear a mask. No, I'm not going to take that vaccine. No, I am going to meet with my friends. We are going to get together. I am going to go over to their house. I am going to open my business. No, I'm not going to comply with that because it's nonsense. That's the thing. That's one of the first things, because that's something that everyone can do. Everyone can do that. We're not all in a position where we can identify and go after the perpetrators behind this sort of thing. Even though they're becoming more identifiable every day. And we're not all in a position where we can go out and directly do something about it, to go on the offense, so to speak. But this is that noncompliance, that civil disobedience is vital for us to get through this. And you can look at the examples of how civil disobedience has been so successful in the past. Martin Luther King Jr., Gandhi, you see that in movements for freedom since the beginning of time. But that part of the way that we retain the good things that we have built up through this structured society, especially the last 100 years, where we retain the good things that we built up through that structured society and perpetuate those good parts of it into the future further to help create that kingdom of heaven, that much closer to that kingdom of heaven, by retaining those good things, is that noncompliance. And that noncompliance, when we qualify it with, by saying, if there's an authoritative figure that comes along and says, hey, I want you to cover up your face and restrict your oxygen flow. I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. But if there's an authoritative figure that comes over to me and says, hey, we're going to build this awesome building, and it's going to be very, very beautiful, and would you like to help out with that? It's like, maybe. Yeah, actually, I like that idea. I think I'm into that. When do we meet? Let's work once a week. Well, for a couple hours in the afternoon. Or someone comes over and says, hey, these are generally asking things. Now, if someone came over to me and said, hey, you are going to go work and put this well in. We're going to go dig a well for the community. You are going to go work and do it. You know, that's not too bad an idea. Especially in a place if you really need water, you need access to it. I would rather do that. If someone, some authoritative figure, some health figure came over to me and said, hey, you are going to dig this well with us. I'd be like, oh, okay. That's not a bad idea. Okay, all right. But if someone comes up to me and says, you are going to put something over your face and you're going to restrict your breathing. No. I mean, it's a strange thing because even just now, me saying that, I just had this sense that that someone came over to me and ordered me. If someone came over and ordered me to dig a well for water, that itself, I'm probably going to say no. Anyway, now, at that, that still seems to be, now I might be doing other things, clearly. I might be busy with other stuff. Be like, hey, you could get someone else to do it. Or, hey, how about I get a little bit of money off the top of it? What if I got a certain percentage from the revenue that comes from this well that we're making, that we're putting together? Then we can start negotiating about that sort of thing. But if someone just ordered me to do it, and it was public, and it was for people, just the general public, that's not a bad thing to just follow through on. This will go into a larger point when it comes to orders and issuance. There is an essay on that on my website I encourage you all to check out. That pertains to that particular, this particular concept and where it goes. And especially important now, too. But what I'm really getting at is that it's important on us, on our part, to think about the quality of what we are being told to do. When someone comes over and they say, you need to do this, regardless of their rationale. I mean, their rationale might be true, might be not, whatever. It's hard to tell who's lying and who isn't these days. Not only whether they're lying or whether they're sincerely misinformed as well. That's a possibility. That's still a thing. It's less a thing every day that the truth comes out about this and many other issues. But nonetheless, that is still a thing where people are sincerely misinformed. And clearly comes from lying media, again, goes back to that. But it's important that we look at the quality of these orders that we are being asked to follow. And that's something I brought up in that Exorcism of Tyranny flyer as well, that is so vital. On the second leaf, quote, it's time to stop going along to get along. Evil engineers know that we don't want trouble, and they're using that against us. Here's the point. You need to really pay attention to what you're doing and what you're being asked to do in work and in general. I mean, it seems like a simple thing, but when so much of our population, so much of all of us, has been educated in factory education and then went to work afterward in adulthood, that is so structured, there's such hard structures to so much of our work and schooling, that just thinking about that is very, very difficult for a lot of people. And I'm trying to wake you all up to, out of the routines, that has been established by the conditioning, to such that you really do question this sort of thing, because so many of us operate like, you know, walk around like robots. And personally, I have my own structures, my own sort of arrangement in which I go about, that everybody is aware or unaware of, everyone is unaware of certain habits that they have that are very consistent. And it's different for everybody. But when you see there is a consistency of sort that is highly structured, that I would encourage you all to step outside of, and that's the line right there. We need to pay attention, really pay attention, to what we're doing and what we're being asked to do. This is especially important in hospitals as well. To step back from the astounding amount of contextual rationale for why this, that, this is why you do that, this is why you do that, this is why you do that, why, and really just look at the what. What are you doing? What is it? And just look at it with fresh eyes. Use your eyes and ears rather than using your conditioning, so to speak. And another point to be brought up on considering that is that, and going back to the legitimacy of government dependent upon its respect for principles. Now, we refer to government as it, as it is this amorphous thing out there, in similar manner to organizations like corporations, that sort of thing. Do we refer to them as it? And why do we refer to them as that? Because lots of times they don't seem to operate according to the will of an individual. I mean, you have, in the case of corporations, there's a board that oversees what it does, how it operates. And in the case of our government, it's all different. Except when it comes to, we have representatives and senators, and there's a president involved, three different separate branches. Clearly, the way that we put it together here in the States is absolutely genius. And the fact that we're making it through this crisis is just astounding. It really is. And it speaks to the brilliance of our founding fathers and the strength of the American people right now. Seriously, y'all, we are rocking it. Unfortunately, in some places, they're having a tough time. But anyway, so even though we call these structures it, as in it's not directly related to the imposition of a particular person, or it's not under the dominion, or except in some ways like kingdoms, like the queen's country, stuff like that. We're like, okay, it's dependent upon the queen. The queen says what she says, and that's her government. It is, in a way, clearly this isn't how the, let's say, the United Kingdom operates at present. But at a certain ideal of the idea of a kingdom, or that of a despotism, where you have individuals who are like dictators, you could say that that government is theirs. And you could say that it is, you know, the will of the king that X happen and we do this and Y, et cetera, et cetera. But for the most part, we call these structures it because they're collections of people that have, we're all operating according to what it is that we're doing as individuals. But there's a larger scope that encapsulates the rest of them that we can refer to as some sort of foreign type of entity. Now that's, we have looked at it that way, but part of the way I think that can help to change the consciousness about how we operate on these levels is to actually look at the government as us. We really are doing this. To view that as we have a say in the groupthink that comes along. Because when you start questioning that conditioning and you question those strictures that you are set to operate under, the gates that arrange the various lanes in which so much of our work that we do ordains us to operate. When you start questioning those lates and those lanes and those gates, and when there's a dictate that is given by the higher up in the authoritative structure, and we say no to one of them, then what we're doing is, in a way, we're taking control of that larger organism, that larger organization to a certain extent. And when that happens, the government becomes less an it, but it becomes us. Now, getting to that ideal, it's kind of flipping it around a little bit. It kind of is, because when we really think about and determine what we do amongst the authoritative structures, amongst these orders that we're given, and we follow some of them and we don't follow others, we really do start to take control of that. And that's the power of this non-compliance. Not just the non-compliance, but also the power of willful, of the will, I guess, individual will, I suppose you might say, where we say, okay, I hear from an authoritative, from the boss, or from the strictures of the regulations that I am supposed to do X. But looking at that, that seems like either nonsense or it's abusive or whatever. And so ignore that. And then you hear from the boss. You hear from the strictures, the regulations that you're supposed to do Y. And you look at that and you're like, yeah, that's reasonable. Okay. You know, there, go from there. Part of the reason that it's ingrained in us these days, especially, to not question so many of those orders is that, well, A, there's been various punishments that come upon you. You lose your job, you lose your pay, that sort of thing. If you don't follow through with what your authoritative, you know, your boss says, or what the regulations say, or that sort of thing. But there is also a very deeply ingrained sense that so much of this was put together for the purpose of creating large groups of people who would all follow orders. And in order to do what? Why is it that these large groups of people, these large organizations want more and more people to be within their sphere of authority. Why is that? And you go back certainly through the factory education system, and you find out that it comes down to war. It really does. Because you had a authoritative structure, authoritative group of a group of people who were governed by an authoritative hierarchy that became very, very powerful, and that authoritative hierarchy ended up wanting to get more people into it, so it sent its people out into the neighboring ground and land and started taking over those people. And in order for those people to defend themselves against that that absorbing blob of authoritative hierarchy that wanted to assimilate them into its being, they had to create an authoritative hierarchy that could fight back against it, such that in order for us to defend ourselves against these other governments, we had to create governments that could defend. I mean, it's a... And this is part of the reason that factory education had been so prevalent, because it's effective. It's really effective at creating a skilled population that is capable of not only following complicated orders, simple orders too, but complicated ones as well, but also with working with the technology that is necessary in order to get to that next level of war. And so since we're in the midst of that, we're in the midst of World War III, and in order for us to get out of it, I think ultimately that's one of the things we really have to look at, is why is it that we have these large-scale societal authoritative hierarchies? What's the purpose behind them? And what good purpose is behind them to retain, and to jettison the negative purposes behind them? And if we look at this on an individual basis and question the orders that come from the higher-ups on that, eventually we will find a more organic manner in which we as a society operate through those authoritative hierarchies that are beneficial for ourselves and for each other. So it would seem in a lot of ways that that's happening concerning the virus panic. As bad as it's been, but where it's going to go after that is as we create this age of heroes, you might say. Age of heroes and age of villains. Because the villains are really being identified, and the heroes are really stepping up. Because when you go against those orders that have no real justification and that are completely illegitimate, especially when they originate from a government that is broken its most sacred laws, when you stand up against them, you really are a hero. You're stepping out of that school of fish, and you're showing that you, on an individual level, are willing to risk it. And the more people that do that, the better. And that's the very thing that's going to get us out of this, such that those great social authoritarian hierarchies need not abuse us much further. So in a way, since the government is us, and the choices that we make within what we're told to do, the orders that we give, and the orders that we receive, and whether we give them, or whether we follow through with those given us, This is an element of raising consciousness. This is a shift and a change in how we view ourselves, what we are to follow through and do, and what we intend and determine of our own volition. Now, it's great to see this sort of thing happening, and it really is. And that term, raising consciousness, it's kind of been a bit of a funny one, kind of a joke in a lot of ways. If you look back to like the hippie era, and you're like, okay, well, what are you really doing? Are you raising consciousness? Yeah, that'll change the world. Sure. Well, but it really does. It really does happen. The choice to be able to do that is always on the individual themselves. You know, are you going to follow through with this questionable order, or are you going to say no and stand your ground? Are you going to let yourself be abused? Are you going to lie in order to get a couple extra bucks? Or are you going to stick by your principles? That's really what it comes down to. So much of the time we look at old movies and that sort of thing, and you think it's very hokey and just kind of old-timey to see like a chivalric sense that some characters would have. But we're finding these days, this is where the rubber meets the road and why it is so important to maintain those principles and to maintain that integrity, especially in the face of, you know, a seeming monster that claims that it cannot be defeated, but at the same time we are witnessing it collapse and crumble right now. And one of those things that's collapsing and crumbling is the willful ignorance that people have had to this, to all of this, to the lying of the media, to the abuse of the population, to what they'd be willing to take so long as it came from some so-called higher authority. And we're realizing too, the experts, they're not authorities. They're not, especially when they get peddled around on the corporate media. They never were. They're always in the business of just making themselves more money, gaining more control and power over good people in this country and elsewhere. And they're not to be listened to. What we can do is listen to ourselves. Listen to the voice inside you. Listen to the good heart that you have, and the golden soul, that divine portion that you were gifted with. That so often seems to take a back seat to this material world that we can witness and touch. But it is just as real. And when you get in touch with that, there's a strength there that no material, no so-called authority, no monster can ever destroy, can ever touch. I encourage you all to find that strength. Find that divine spark that you have inside of you. Listen to it. Hang on to your principles and integrity and stand strong with them. Because really, that's where God lives. It's a great place to reside. So I'll leave it at that for the day. This has been November 17th, 2021. This has been your host, GT Maverick, coming to you from Kansas City, Missouri. Wishing you peace, love, harmony, justice, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.